interested. Actually, learning today is dedicated Lilui Nishmat in memory of Aaron Zev ben Yosef. Chana, your son Eli dedicated it. So his neshama should have an aliyah. Okay, so we spent the last two times talking about David and Yehonatan and the beginning of Perek Yudchet of chapter 18, and we established that you can't establish much. No, we established that clearly Yehonatan loves David. David's feelings for Yehonatan are vague at this point. They're not stated in the text, although there was the argument that Ahava is normally presented in Tanakh as X loves Y, even if the relationship really goes in both directions. And we noted that certainly by the time we get to Yehonatan's death, David will have expressed his love for Yehonatan. So either something evolves or something is there. But I'm not spending a lot of time on David and Yehonatan right now. Instead, we're going to be talking about David and Shaul as the chapter continues. So, Perek Yudchet, chapter 18, sentences 6 to 9 are the next section. And what we're doing now is retreating chronologically. So let me explain what that means. In the end of chapter 17, after David killed Goliath and he cut off his head, we saw David go to meet Shaul and along the way Yehonatan. And that carried over into the beginning of this chapter. So the opening sentences until Pasuk Dalet, until sentence 4, were all that moment right after the battle. Pasuk Hey, sentence 5, jumped forward in time with a general statement that David went out wherever Shaul sent him, and he was great, whatever Shaul sent him to do, he succeeded, and he was over the soldiers. That's obviously not happening that day. That's describing something that's happening in the future, and indeed, we're going to see sentence 13 is going to be where he's actually charged with leading the military. So sentence 5, Pasuk Hey, was just a description of what's going to happen. And now, Pasuk Vav, we go back to what happened right afterward and what I am thinking of as the Goliath's Head Tour. It sounds vaguely like something that a metal rock band would call their tour, the Goliath's Head Tour. If no one has done that yet, I didn't Google it. But in sentences 6 to 9, that's what we're going to find here. And then sentence 10, Pasuk Yud, is going to proceed from there. So we are now back to right after David has killed Goliath. Let's take a look. We're just going to read through straight first, and then we have some themes that we need to discuss. Pasuk Vav, sentence 6. Vayihi bevo'am. And it was when they came, meaning the warriors, who we just described, when those warriors came back, Bishuv David me'akoses ha'plishti, when David came back from striking the plishti, vateitzena hanashim mikol arei Yisrael. And the women went out from all of the cities of Israel, lashir, to sing, v'hamecholos, and with mecholos, mecholos or mecholot, can be translated in different ways. Radak believes here that it's a handheld instrument, it's a tambourine of some kind. You also have the word machol used frequently in Tanakh as a dance, right? Either one can fit. And of course, as we say this, knowing that this week's Shabbos is Bishalach, Shabbos Shira, if you remember, after Uz Yashir, we're told that Miriam leads the women, and Vateitzena kol hanashim achareha bitupim uvimcholot. All the women went out after her with drums and mecholot, whether that's an instrument, whether that's a dance, unclear to me. But here, they go out with their instruments and with their dancing. Likras Shaul HaMelech, to go out to greet King Shaul, bisupim, there are the drums, bisimcha, with joy, ubashalishim. Shalishim, according to the Targum and Rashi, are bells. Whereas according to the Radak, it's a string instrument with three strings. Parenthetically, I probably could have done more with this, but I didn't think about it until now. Miriam and the women here are not the only cases in Tanakh in which women come out after a battle with Tupim and Mecholot. Where's the other case? At least there's a third that I know of. Maybe there are more. Nope. Nope. No Tupim and Mecholot for Devorah. She writes a poem. That's Parakeh there. But that's not the same thing. Yes, Etty.
When David came back from a war and he was dancing in front of the ark.
So that's not coming back from a war. That's when they're taking the ark to Jerusalem and there are no Tupim there.
No?
No Tupim, no Mecholot.
Okay.
Sorry, Ora?
Is there anything when they crossed into Jericho?
Nope. That's a weird echo in Israel there. Nope, nothing when they cross the Yarden. Yes, Alina.
Maybe Yiftach's daughter?
Correct. Yiftach's daughter comes out to greet Yiftach with Tupim and Mecholot. And in all three cases, it's a demonstration of righteousness. Meaning, she is portrayed as this very righteous person, and that's a story in its own right, obviously. But these are three cases of coming out to sing and to dance and to celebrate after the war. And this happens, as it says here, in all of the cities. Remember that we talked about how David ends up in Yerushalayim, and we had the suggestion that maybe he ended up in Shaul's home, and that's near Yerushalayim. But this is happening in all the cities that David and Shaul show up in, that the women come out and they sing and they dance. Okay, well, we think dance, we don't know. Dance or instrument, unclear. Vata'anena hanashim hamisachakot, vatomarna. And the women who were misachakot. Tell me, what do your translations do with misachakot? In Pasuk Zayin, sentence 7.
If cheering.
Cheering?
If cheering if they go.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question before?
Hang on. I want to hear Misachakot first. Yes, Etty.
Misachakot means playing.
So it can, but it doesn't have to.
And also it could be laughing.
It can be laughing. You are correct.
Teasing.
That's interesting. Is that from a text or that's your own?
No. Well, when you learn about Yitzhak and Ishmael,
yeah, but that wasn't teasing. That was mocking.
Yeah. Okay, mocking. Yes.
Yeah.
But better than teasing.
So, yeah. Misachakot, I mean, I know people here have different translations. I was hoping to hear if anyone had anything else. But right now, the women who are laughing or the women who are playing or something declared and they said, Hika Shaul ba'alafav v'David berivivotav. I'm going to translate that literally. Shaul struck with his thousands and David with his myriads, right? Myriad is 10,000. Myriad is not a made up word. It means 10,000. Okay. So, first of all, Susan, what were you going to ask?
I was going to ask, is this like what we learned before when you go from city to city with the head? I can't remember. We did that before. We said when the head was cut off, we assumed he went.
No. This is that story.
It is that. Okay.
This is
so
that story.
He's going from city to city.
Yep.
To show
everybody Goliath is killed. Correct. Okay, look at this amazing miracle. This frightening warrior is dead.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Sure. So, yes, Janine.
Does he have to mean with? Could it mean he hit them?
Could mean. So the only problem with that would be the possessive, right? It would have been Hikash Shaul Ba'al Fehem.
But his, you know, when you're attributing the killing to his thousands versus his...
Maybe. I mean, we're about to see a lot of different ways that you could read this sentence. I wanted to know from those who have translations what their translations do to render what the women were saying here. About Shaul and about David. So I'm going to actually call on people because not everybody is reading aloud here. Claudette.
Mine said the women sang as they danced and they chanted.
Interesting. Dance. They're taking Misachot as dancing. Okay. And how do they, what does it say after chanting?
It said they chanted, Shaul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000.
So that's interesting. Janine, that would actually be what you were suggesting. Claudette, which edition do you have?
I have the Tanakh, this one.
Is that JPS? I can't really see from here. Jewish Publication Society?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one read, obviously. David has, you know, Saul has killed thousands and David has killed myriads. Anybody have a translation that does something different? Okay. Well,
tens of thousands.
Well, tens of thousands is on the David part of it.
Yeah.
Myriads or tens of thousands, that's the same thing. So, usually, yes, Hannah. You're on mute.
Sorry.
Yeah, Hannah. Rakshniya, I wanted to hear the translations that people have. The Mefarshim I'm going to give you. Don't worry.
No, it's not a translation.
Yeah, no, it's a perush. It's a perush. There are a few different angles here. The first approach, the usual approach, is that the women are elevating David over Shaul. That's the way people usually read it. Shaul is impressive. David is even more impressive, right? That's the norm that people have. Another possible meaning is brought by Malbim. Although he doesn't think this is what the women meant, but nonetheless, Malbim's read that he offers is that Shaul leads thousands of soldiers, and David leads tens of thousands of soldiers. So there are more people supporting David than supporting Shaul. And then there's another variation, which Radak offers. If you take a look at source number one on your sheet, Radak has, Shaul hikab ba'alafim ba'plishtim, v'David makeb ba'hem revavot. Shaul struck thousands of plishtim, David struck myriads of them. O perusho, or he says, im alafav, v'im rivavotav, with his thousands, with his tens of thousands, klomar, meaning, kishemakeh shaul baplishtim, makehu levado ki'ilu imo alafim. When Shaul strikes the plishtim, it's as though he has thousands of people with him. And David, he is able to strike as though he had tens of thousands at his side. So these are three different approaches, Basic, Malbim, Radak, which have the women elevating David over Shaul. Either Shaul is impressive for killing thousands, David kills more. Or Shaul leads thousands, David leads more. Or Shaul is able to strike powerfully like thousands, David is even more powerful. He strikes like there are tens of thousands with him. Okay. But this is a problem. Is this really what the women meant? Make an argument, please, that can't be what the women were trying to do. I'm asking you, can you make an argument that is not what the women were doing? Yes, Eti.
None of the three of them?
Yeah.
None of your three.
Correct. The women were not elevating David over Shaul. Yes, Eti.
According to my translation, it says, and the women answered one another as they played, and said, Shaul has slain his thousands and Amid his 10,000. I'm thinking they're just sitting and gossiping while they're doing their own thing.
Right. See, that's a weakness in a translation that says answered. The verb la'anot in Tanakh, and especially in Nach, is very often to declare out loud. So you have nivuot, right? You have prophecies that begin with vata'an or vaya'an, especially in Zechariah you see it. It's not to answer like one person talking to somebody else. It's a declaration out loud. These women are indeed loud, and you'll see, Shaul knows. Shaul hears them and doesn't respond well. But I want you to ask a question about what we've said so far, because I can come up with at least three reasons to argue that the women are not elevating David over Shaul. Yes, Janine.
The passage before it says, Shaul HaMelech. That would be really
yeah.
to come to praise the other guy.
Right. So Rav Amnon Bazak says they came out to praise Shaul.
Right.
Why would they now be elevating David? It doesn't make any sense. David hasn't done anything. He hasn't gone out to lead armies yet. So you could say, well, okay, but they saw Goliath's head. Right? That's pretty impressive. So maybe you could make that argument. Claudette, you were going to say?
The point you just made, because my Tanakh has that, they came out to reach Shaul,
yeah,
not David. I think that the women thought that Shaul was the king, and David was his subordinate, and, you know, was just a soldier, that they had the freedom to talk to Shaul that way, because it's his man. That is good.
So they think that they're not really taking, you're not really diminishing Shaul by praising David.
Because it's his man that is
right.
being, you know.
So that plays into my second argument here, which is, since when do you credit an individual soldier over the commander-in-chief who manages the war and in front of him? So if you take Claudette's view, it's not intended as an insult. It's, we're praising the soldier in front of the commander, but that's a way of praising the commander also. But on the face of it, it seems very strange. And then there's a third point. If you take the view that Radak presented, right? If you take the view that Shaul strikes as though he had thousands at his side and David as though he had tens of thousands at his side. So Malbim says, isn't it greater if you succeed with fewer numbers? Right? It's greater, right, when Gidon goes out with a few hundred people and is able to defeat the enemy. That looks a lot better. You're better off if you can say, ha, I beat the enemy with thousands. He needed tens of thousands. So it's just the opposite. Yes, Leona?
I got to unmute.
No, you are unmuted.
Oh, I am?
Yep.
Okay. I don't really agree with that, okay?
Okay.
First of all, yeah, I mean, you could say that it's actually in praise of Shaul, right? I don't see it. I see the Messiah Hakim and all that as more of a derogatory thing. And if we take a look at what is going on and what Shaul didn't even fight. This is immediately after the war with the Plishtim.
Correct.
Where David has actually displayed the head of Goliath before Shaul and obviously all the soldiers that were around him and surrounding him. So he's already lost status, it seems to me, both in the eyes of his soldiers and both in the eyes of the nation. Because he has not come forth as the king, the strong king anymore. So I think that this is really is. And the second reason, I think, is the text immediately after tells us Shaul's reaction to this, which is definitely not in favor of David. It is a jealousy there.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was jealous, why, if he had seen it as a compliment to him, and yay, Shaul kind of thing, why would he be so upset about this and take it so personally as a negative, not as a positive?
So Shaul, hang on, Claudette, I'm sorry. Shaul is definitely going to take it as a negative. The question is, what did the
women
mean?
It as a negative.
The question is what the women meant. And that's where
women
I wanted to go with this.
Yes.
Because Malbim is going to suggest, and Rav Bazak is going to suggest in a different way, that the women actually meant Shaul was greater, and Shaul misinterpreted their words. Take a look at Malbim, please. It's source number 2. And I'll tell you why he misinterpreted it. It's coming too, and Leona referenced it a little bit. But take a look at Malbim in source number 2. Amru, they said, Shagadol anitzachon shenitzeach Shaul v'yonatan, Shahayala rak alafim kanizkar lamala, al nitzachon David shayu imo revavot Yisrael. The women said that Shaul and Yonatan, who had thousands with them, right? We saw that earlier back in chapter 11, 12, 13, 14 when we described their armies. Their victory, which they did back in chapters 13 and 14, that win when he won, with thousands of people was greater than what David did here when he had tens of thousands against Goliath and the Plishtim. Because remember, there's a rout that comes along with killing Goliath. So what they're saying is, the earlier war, chapters 13 and 14, was greater than this one. Oh, or alternatively, Kivnu b'milat rivavot al ha'avanim sherava. Maybe, when they said rivavot, the myriads of David, David wasn't leading them, it's the word rava like roveh. Right? Roveh is when you throw a projectile. Roveh kashat is to shoot an arrow with a bow. So maybe it means the stones that David threw at Goliath. Ulam, however, don't worry about that, Leona. That's not his point. His point is the next words. Ulam Shaul, no, I'm talking. Ulam Shaul lakach hadvarim kifi pashtam. But Shaul took these words in their simple meaning. Ki'ilu kivnu she Yisrael asherim David rabim me asherim Shaul. As though they were saying that David has greater support than Shaul. They didn't mean it that way. They're comparing the two victories and saying Shaul's victory is greater, but that's not the way Shaul took it. And I think Malbim means to support that when he makes the note in source number 3. He also pointed out that the women are identified here as misachakot, right? Which we've explained as singing, as laughing, as playing, dancing. So he says, Lo HaMeshora wrote, Shein hamidabrot divrei shir kfi atzmut or atzmut hadavar. He says, not the singers who speak poetically according to actual speech. I'm not sure what he means with those words, but I know what he means with his next words. Rak hamisachakot shein hadovrot divrei sechok. Misachakot, those who play. They use word play. Dibur baal shtei panim. They use words that have multiple meanings. La'orer tzchok v'simcha, to arouse laughter and joy, if you think of a badchan, right? They're trying to make people laugh. And so they say these words that are meant to be clever as a form of entertainment, because you could read them multiple ways. So Malbim suggests that the women were contending that Shaul was greater, but Shaul misinterpreted what they said. One other approach that's misinterpretation, and then I'll explain why Shaul misinterpreted it. But take a look at source number 4, Rav Bazak, in his article, David Bebeit Shaul. I've quoted that article already, at least once before. He says, Hashira b'nuya al derech ha-hadraga ha-lishonit bilavad. He says, the poem is constructed only in the manner of increasing language. When he says only, what he means is, that's all they were doing, is increasing language. What does that mean? Below mashma'ut kamutit. So there's no connotation of quantity. The numbers were non-specific. The adaraba, hanashim patchu b'sha'ul, sha'oto ra'u, kidmut ha-merkazit. They mentioned Sha'ul first, because they saw him as the central figure. Meaning, I'm going to explain it before we read it in his words, because I think it'll actually make it more clear. What they're trying to do is describe the greatness of the victory. And they say, he's got thousands, he's got tens of thousands, everything is wonderful. We have such power. Not meaning to say the one we mentioned first is lesser than the one we mentioned second. And he says, I'll give you examples of this. He says, Anu makirim psukim nosafim habenuyim betavnit lishonit zu. He says, I'm going to show you examples of this from other psukim. In Vayikra, the promise of when you do what you're supposed to do, then 5 of you will pursue 100, and 100 of you will pursue 10,000. The numbers are nonspecific. The math doesn't work. So he says, it's not about math. It's just to increase and say, look how great the victory is going to be. And they give you he gives you 2 other examples. How could 1 pursue 1,000, 2 pursue 10,000, 1,000 will fall from your side, 10,000 from your right side. It's a poetic form in which you start with a lower number and then you proceed to a greater number. That's all this was. It wasn't meant to be a knock on Shaul. However, he says, Mipsukim elu olesh medubar b'mivne safruti shachiach. He says, from these psukim, it's clear this was just a common poetic form. Beloshum ha'adafa shel ha'ever ha'sheni al pnei ha'rishon. There is no elevation of the second one mentioned over the first. Mikoma kom Shaul pereshet hadvarim ki ilu nitna hashira adifut leDavid al panav. He explained it. He saw it. Hang on, as though the women had been elevating David over him. Now I'm going to ask you the question. Why would Shaul have read it in this way? I see a whole bunch of hands. So I'm going to try to go in order of who I saw. Ricky, Leona, Etty, Jeanette. Yes, Ricky.
Okay, I want to go backwards a little bit.
Oh, one second. Forwards first and then backwards. So I'm going to come back to you, Ricky. I wanted to answer this question first and then you can go backwards.
But maybe they did mean it the way that it is said. Maybe they just saw the potential in David, in David, and they said, okay, well, Shaul did this, but David is doing, did that, as in seeing his potential and seeing what he's capable of.
But then you have to justify the fact that they're doing this, mentioning Shaul, going out to greet Shaul, the commander-in-chief versus the soldier. I think that's a hard sell. And the more I think about it, the more I think it's difficult. Etty, you were next. Etty, just go next, please. Thanks.
Okay. Don't forget, Shaul is very vulnerable at this time because he was told he wasn't going to be king anymore and Shmuel is not talking to him anymore. And he's very vulnerable, so he's taking everything, like, personally.
Good. So one possibility is he sees his doom coming. And we're going to see that very clearly in the psukim that follow, and therefore he sees doom everywhere. That's one possibility for sure. Leona?
Well, I'd like to go back in the text, actually, because if we're talking about when certain events took place, we discussed it either last week or the week before, that the previous part of Yud Chet and Yud Zayin were actually predating the whole episode with Goliath when he's brought into the court afterwards and he's made something and he becomes a big shot. And just before this part, the last words are, Vayitap v'enei kol ha'am v'gam v'enei avdei Shaul. So Shaul is probably aware, he's not that out of it yet, that this guy is really making an impact on all of his servants, all his workers, all the people. And this is just like a culmination. And then the women come out and are seemingly praising David over him. It just fuels he's already begun to be suspicious. And his son that he adores, Yonatan, his big warrior son, is become very, very close with David. So the juxtaposition of these psukim right after we find out how popular David has become would make it natural, I think, for Shaul to assume that this is just a further nail in his coffin.
So the problem is, I hear the major point I agree with, but the application to sentence 5 doesn't work because, again, it's describing things that haven't happened yet. It's reading to us. Sentence 5 hasn't happened yet. That's the problem. It's a description of events going forward. Jeanette first. Jeanette and then Susan.
Right. So, I think it's a little bit similar to what Etsy was saying, but just, I think one of the themes that's happening now is we're watching through a lot of different vantage points the deterioration of Shaul. And the what's happening to him, what this Ruach Ra is doing. And we're seeing an up and down. We're seeing him try to still be the leader, but failing. And we're just, I think this is a very important part of seeing where he's at, where that Ruach Ra is at, where he looks at everything in a negative way, and where even the mention of David brings up, as Etty was saying, a suspicion and a negativity where when you're somewhere where everything seems negative, even when it's meant in a positive way, it says something about you.
Right, and I think that supports what Leona had said, what Etty had said. I think there's another way to look at it still, but Susan, no? Okay. What I would suggest, not to disagree with the points about the doom and gloom and the ruach ra'ah and you're going to be replaced and Yehonatan and all of that, but I would offer another idea, which is to go back to the guilt feelings that we know Shaul has, or we think Shaul has about David being the one to go to war against Goliath.
Oh.
This battle was supposed to be Shaul's battle against Goliath, and David went in his place, and he tried to give him his armor, and David rejected it. So I wonder, as I read this, whether Shaul isn't on some level thinking to himself, David deserves the greater praise. He really is the one with the revavot, and I'm the one with the alafim. I wonder if you know, when you yourself see yourself as being lower, you're more apt to perceive other people as seeing you lower. You know what I'm saying? I wonder to what extent that drives Shaul's read of what it is that the women are saying. I'm going to go back to what we said in the beginning. You could read this legitimately the way that the world in general reads it. Meaning, you could read this that the women really are singing to David over singing to Shaul. But to me, I don't think that's intended. I think what's going on is that Shaul is taking it as though they were doing so, but it's not necessarily what the women had intended. So let's see Shaul's reaction. Let's take a look at Shaul's reaction. Pasuk Chet, sentence 8. Vayichar l'Shaul ma'od. Shaul is very angry. Vayera be'inav hadavar hazeh. This is very bad in his eyes. Vayomer, and he said, Nasnu l'David rebavos. Veli nasnu ha'alafim. They gave David the myriads. Me, they gave the thousands. Ha! Chutzpah. Va'od lo ach ha'melucha. What else is left for him but to actually take the throne? Right? Take a look at Radak in source number 5. Lo nishar dvar gedula shelo nasnu lo bedivreihem. Nothing great is left that they didn't already give him with their words. Ela shelo karuhu melech. They just didn't call him king. Now, we're going to come back to this to talk about Shaul's sense that he's losing the throne here. But I want to read the remaining sentence in this section first. So, Pasuk Tet, sentence 9. Vayihi Shaul oyein es David mehayom hahu vahala. Shaul was oyein. How do your translations render oyein?
Suspicious eye.
Keep an eye on him. Right? Oyein. Ayin is an eye. He's going to keep an eye on David. Rashi says it's ayin ra'ah. It's an evil eye, an evil eye in its literal Tanakh sense of jealousy. The I don't want you to have whatever it is. That's that's the idea here. But he's keeping an eye on him one way or the other. He's not happy, with the way things are going. That's for sure. Yes, Susan.
I'm wondering, Shaul knew when Shmuel left him that he was losing the throne. He was told not to, period, it's gone. And he knows somebody's taking his place. So far, the script has not mentioned anybody else near the level of David.
Yep.
So it's like he had no choice. Well, no choice may be the wrong word. David was the only person to suspect, according to our text.
Yep. No, at this stage, David's the only one that we know of on the playing field.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's natural that whether the women said what they said, whichever way you interpret it, he's going to look at David and say, I know I'm losing the throne. Shmuel told me for sure. I'm looking around. Nobody else is getting any. Forgetting about what came after. Nobody else is doing what David's doing. He plays the thing. He's all of these wonderful things. He can be the only one I can assume
will take him by the place.
So I'm gonna come back to that, because that's actually where I'm going next. But before we go there, Chana, you had wanted to say something before about the song from Dat Mikra? Nope.
When I look at the Masachav, it's almost like translation, and he gives the thing that you said later. Like a translation if it's in Hebrew, but okay.
Yeah, okay.
So he speaks it the way you like.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. But I think it's important to recognize Amos Chacham is also a Mefaresh, meaning very often he'll give you what he found in Radak or in Malbim or whatever, but he's trying to explain. He's not only trying to translate. Eti.
Oyen in Hebrew is also like being animosity.
Yes. And that's very much here, right? There's, as someone translated as suspicion, you know, a sense that this man is against me.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this. Shaul senses the loss of his throne. Why does Shaul take the words of these singing women seriously? Like, let's say he's right in his read, and they're trying to elevate David. So what? I mean, no offense. I realize this is a women's class, and therefore I'm talking to a group of women. But in the end of the day, he's the king. You know, at the end of this day, not too many more, but like, why does this disturb him? Yes, Ruth.
Well, he knows this is like the beginning of the end.
He knows it's the beginning of the end, but
he senses it. He knows he's not going to be king anymore, or his son's not going to follow on. So he knows already. Well, this is the future.
So it could be, and you could go back to what Susan had said, that anybody can see what David is doing, right? He's ambitious, he volunteered to fight Goliath, he succeeded, and I think that's true, but I want to show you something interesting from Ralbag in source number 6.
Can I just say, maybe he thinks also that David is more worthy than he is.
He thinks that David is more worthy, potentially, so that goes back to the guilt question. Possibly. Take a look at Ralbag, though. Yeah. Ralbag is a philosopher. Sorry?
I was just saying that women could be expressing what they talked about at home, and that the nation has to support, like the king has to be wanted and supported by the
But
the women are, the king has to be supported by the nation. The women are expressing what the talk about now.
The problem is that, and this is very important to remember, the women are not, like, there has been no conversation at home. They just showed up with Goliath's head. And David is a nobody until this story. So it's difficult to say that that's what they were reflecting. I think that's hard. I'm going to try switching networks. We have two networks going in the house at the same time, and I'm having trouble on this one. I hope I don't lose you. If I do, I'm going to come right back. Hang on. But I want to see if I can do that. Let's see how this goes. And I'm on the other network. You can still hear me? Okay, so let's see how this goes. Okay, so take a look at source number 6, please, at Ralbag. Ralbag is a philosopher, and one of the things he likes to philosophize about is prophecy. He talks about angels, he talks about miracles, and he likes to talk about nevuah, about prophecy. Rambam does also. But take a look at what Ralbag does here. He says, Lahamon kitzat hashpa'a elokit bidi'at ha'atidut. He says the masses have a little bit of divine influence in terms of knowing the future. Ulazet timtza shekvar hitpael shaul zeha ofen mehahifaalut bedivrei hanashim shayu omrot beelu ashirim sheyorem ma shekvar tiela David hamelucha. So you find that Shaul is moved by the women's words. Hipaalut. He is moved by the women's words, saying that the throne is going to go to David. And that's why he may be upset, but he doesn't rebuke them for it. He doesn't punish them for saying this. I mean, this is, if he really believes that what they're doing is to elevate David over him, these are rebels against the throne. He doesn't do anything about that because he thinks it's from God. Aval hayasone et David va'orev lo lahapilo baderech shelo yashov kamelucha mimenu umizaro. Instead, what he tries to do is to get David. He hates David. He conspires against David so that David won't get the throne. Vihine, zot hamadrega mehahoda'a yikar'u chazal bat kol. He says, when you hear the phrase bas kol or bat kol, literally means a small voice. This is a bas kol. It's when people have a sense of something that is coming to them quasi-prophetically. He says this is a sort of like a form of sorcery, but better, more elevated than sorcery is. The Ralbag says, and Abarbanel brings it as well, but Ralbag said it first, that it reflects a divine message, and that's why Shaul takes it seriously. He thinks there's prophecy involved. Shmuel isn't talking to him anymore. But he thinks that God is still conveying a message. Leona, you look distressed.
I don't kind of like that.
Okay.
I think he is distressed. But I think, actually, in my opinion, he has some justification. I mean, I don't know why he would think that once Shmuel had told him he was going to lose the kingdom, he still had a fighting chance of keeping it for himself and his son. But, I mean, all of the things that preceded this particular event would certainly make him very now suspicious of David. Is David doing this intentionally to gain superiority, or is this just a natural thing of his charisma that has caused this? But, I actually don't think that Shaul is wrong in being suspicious. It's sad.
Because, no, he's right. He's right in being
right.
Suspicious.
I mean,
we know the story.
I don't think necessarily David, but David himself knows he's going to be king.
Yes. So I
there is a little
right.
bit of...
I see a few hands here, but I'm going to actually... I'm going to jump ahead here because there's a lot to say and I don't want to drag this over 2 weeks. So I see the hands. I apologize. But first, we're going to go ahead with a few other ways to look at this. So we have the simple read, which is David is accomplishing a lot and he's ambitious. And as Leona said, he already knows, Shaul knows he's losing the throne. You have the prophetic take that Ralbag has. Malbim says, don't forget, he already knows he's lost the throne. And this is something Leona said also. Take a look at source number 7. Nasan in Yanav Belibo Bechoshvo Ki Huha Ish Shamara Navi Unasana L'Recha Tobi Mecca. He looks around and he says, oh, this is who Shmuel meant. Shmuel said, the one who's better than me, yeah, that would be David. V'lachein Hitchil Lachshov Alav Machshavot Lahargo. And so he says, I'm going to kill him. In all of these views, whichever view I take, David's ambition, Shmuel's message, the women as quasi-prophetic, whichever way I read it, Shaul is worried that Hashem is going to make some kind of an explicit statement to elevate David over him. That God is going to put him in play. Ricky, I'm sorry, I'm going forward here. That he is going to make a statement, God is going to make a statement of declaring David as king. But I'm going to offer you another idea shortly, because I think there are other ways to do it. Before I say that, though, way back in chapter 17, so you have to remember now, more than a month ago, but back in chapter 17, we suggested that Shaul asked about David's lineage, right? Not because he forgot who David was, and not because chapter 17 happens before chapter 16. But because he senses that David is going to replace him. And I pointed out to you then, and I refer back to it now, source number 8, the Gemara in Yevamos, which asks, how could Shaul ask, who is this kid, who is his father? He already knew. We said it in chapter 16. What's going on? And not only that, but Yishai is famous. I'm not reading the text aloud, you can see it there. So the Gemara's answer is that he's asking, does David come from Peretz or Zerach? If he comes from Peretz, he's the one who's going to replace me. The Gemara is sensitive to it and says, Shaul is already anticipating that David is there to replace him. And we saw what I brought in source number 9 from Professor Walfish, the idea that this is operating on a mystical level, that Shaul and Avner sense that something is up here. There's something special about David. So we already have this idea embedded in us from before, from when he asked about David's lineage. But now I want to come back to what Shaul is afraid of. I don't think it's necessarily that he's afraid of Hashem putting David in place. He's not necessarily afraid of a divine coup, so to speak. He's afraid of a national coup. I think Malbim inclines us in this direction. Take a look at source number 10. Malbim makes a comment. Ve'od lo ach ha-melucha. Right? What remains for him? Only the throne. Ki halo bechir ha'am hu ha-molech. The choice of the nation is the one who will reign. Ve'imrov ha'am acharav ha-melucha imo bekoach. If most of the nation is behind him, the throne's already his in potential. Va'od lo chaser lo rak ha-melucha befoal. All he has to do is take it actively. So Malbim already starts to float this idea that the one chosen by the nation is going to reign, not the one necessarily who is even appointed by the Navi. Diane, I don't know if you realize it, but I'm coming back to your question from last week through this. This would fit well with the Ran and Rav Kook, which we talked about way back when in chapter 8, when we talked about where monarchy comes from, and the idea that the Ran and Rav Kook expressed that monarchy is a power that's invested in the nation, and they transfer it to the king who is going to rule over them. The Navi, the prophet's job, when the prophet names somebody, the prophet's job is to direct the nation's choice. And so perhaps what's going on here is that the people have a significant role in choosing who is going to be the next king. Malbim is not discounting the importance of the Navi. Malbim himself says in source number 7, that that Shaul is thinking about the fact that Shmuel said, Re'acha tov mimeka. We're not discounting the importance of the prophet. But in Shaul's own experience, what happened? How did Shaul become king?
He was totally off the Shmuel.
I heard a few things.
Hashem appointed him through Shmuel.
Yes and no. He was anointed by Shmuel in chapter 9. Yeah, Chana?
People chose him. The people chose the king.
Sorry, Chana? Yes.
No, he never said that. He said exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
He said, I'll listen to you that you'll have a king, but it's going to be my king. It's going to be the one that I choose, and he's going to rule through me.
And the answer is yes and no. The answer is yes and no. Chana? I want to hear Chana, folks. Yes.
So the nation did not accept him until he had the victory on Yabesh Gilad.
Correct.
Then they went after him.
Correct. It is true, as Jeanette points out, that in chapter 8, Shmuel said, because Hashem said it to Shmuel, they're only getting the king I choose to give them. That's correct. However, Shaul is anointed by Shmuel in chapter 9. He's revealed to the nation in chapter 10, and the nation is kind of tepid in their response. He does not fully reign until he defeats Ammon, as Chana points out, and then the people accept him in chapter 11. And so Shaul, with that experience behind him, might be wondering whether Shmuel hasn't initiated a similar arc with David. For all he knows, and we do know, David's already been anointed. Remember? Shaul was anointed, and then afterwards he had his military victory. And then the people, by popular acclaim, declared him king. So maybe that's the same thing that's happening here. Just like the people came to Shmuel for a king, got a Navi's approval, maybe now they could come to Shmuel, or they could come to another Navi, right? We had B'nai HaNavi'im, we're going to see God as a Navi, as a prophet, and the people are going to say, we want David, and they'll have approval. And that may answer Diane's question from last week, when she wanted to know, why is Shaul thinking that he can kill David? It's not going to give him the throne back. Maybe, but maybe he thinks the nation is just going to continue to have him as king.
Must Shmuel's... be so much younger than me, Rabbi, because you can remember what I said last week.
No, in this case, it's just a different Diane. Sorry, this is Diane Schiffman, not Diane Tedeschi.
The best memory in the world. You remember
Diane? Your question, Diane. Your memory is doing fine. The it was the other Diane, Diane S instead of Diane C.
Thank you.
But the idea here is that the nation, in theory, could continue to retain Shaul as Melech until somebody emerges who the Navi has picked and who the nation will embrace. That's what I think is going on. And that's what I think he's afraid of here. David may already be anointed. And of course, again, we know the story. He actually is anointed. Shaul's not wrong. Now, I see a few hands, people who waited very patiently, so I just want to mention one other thing, because you have to, it's relevant for this week's Parsha, and then after that I'll take the questions, but I had to make sure to get to this. Source number 11, Medrash out of the blue, and I don't have anything to say about it except I just wanted to point it out. The song that the women sing in our section, right, in our, where we are, they when they sing their song, so it's Likrat Shaul HaMelech, to greet King Shaul. So source number 11 contrasts that with Shirat Hayam, with the song at the sea, where it says, Ashira Lashem, I will sing to God. So it says, Lashem Amaruha, Velo Amaruha Lebasar Vadam, they said it of God, not of flesh and blood. Lo Ke'inyan Shneamar Lahalan, not like what it'll say here, where it says, Vatitzen Anashim, and so on, Likrat Shaul, they went out to greet Shaul. I don't know what to do with that. I don't think it really means to criticize the women who are singing here, and to say, well, they sang to Shaul instead of singing to God. But that is what it sounds like, isn't it? I just thought that was really interesting, so I wanted to make sure to mention it, and not to hold it till next week, after we've read it in the Torah. Okay, I saw Ricky and Claudette and Ruth, so let's go in that order first. Ricky.
I don't understand why the nation isn't told that David was anointed. What kind of timeline is there? Why is he a king in waiting, at the same time being in danger of his life in more than one way?
I don't have an answer. It's a good question. Maybe as we go along, we'll get an answer. But you're asking a fundamentally good question, which is, why do we need this period in between? Why doesn't Shmuel anoint him and declare him? Right? Why does David have to become king through this circuitous path? I don't have an answer yet. Sorry, Ricky. It's a good question. I don't know. Claudette. You're muted.
In the text, it says that they went out to greet King Shaul, right? But the women did not address him as king. They just said Shaul. So I think it could be a way that he was offended also about that.
That's interesting. That's an interesting thought. I hadn't picked up on that, but you're right. They don't call him HaMelech. I'm not sure whether they would have said Melech Shaul or HaMelech.
David in name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. What we'd really have to do is go through the book as a whole and see what people say when they speak to either Shaul or David and whether they use the term HaMelech. We have individual cases where they do. Yonatan at one point says HaMelech David. I wonder. I don't know. We'd have to go through and look. Ruth, you were going to say?
Okay, this might also answer Ricky's question.
Oh, great.
But wasn't Shaul told, he wasn't told that his kingship would end in his lifetime, oh, if I got it right, only that it wouldn't carry on after he was gone, but his son would not reverse.
So that's the first time. when he loses the throne the first time in chapter 13, then it's about not going to his descendants. But in chapter 14, Hashem, actually, Shmuel says, Kara Hashem et Mamlechut Yisrael, Hashem has torn it away from you today and given it away to Re'acha Tov Mimecha, your friend. Shaul should not be king at this point. Ricky's asking a good question. I just don't have an answer yet. Susan and then Etty.
I'd like to answer. I have an idea on Ricky's question.
Yeah.
The people still are following Shaul. They may have seen David, so he won Goliath, but Shaul's been our leader and they've come to accept him. And just like when Shaul was first made king, the people weren't so ready to accept him, even though they wanted a king at that point. Maybe part of it was David had to really prove himself. Shaul had to go through this descent to give up, so it would be less divisive with the people, because even though Shmuel is the prophet, Shaul will have his followers, David will have his followers, and you could end up with a real war.
It's an interesting possibility. It's an interesting thought for sure. I think we should watch and see how this develops over the ensuing chapters, because we have, you know, quite a bit to go in terms of the back and forth between them. But it's certainly an interesting possibility that this is just a matter of, it's sort of David's 40 years in the Midbar. Until everything is set.
Everybody accepts him and Shaul has to go through his own defenses.
I hear the idea. Okay, there was one other. I think it was Etty. Yeah.
I was in the same lines as Susan, that David has to prove himself to the people before he's declared king.
Mm-hmm. So it could be. Well, what we're going to see next time, God willing, starting in Pasuk Yud, is the day after Shaul hears the women praising David. What happens next between Shaul and David, and what does this Oyein suspicion look like? So that's what we're going to start, God willing, next week. Okay?
Okay.
Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.